set for all the action. This is the Land Rover Pregame Show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network. Here's Satyar Shah.
It is the Land Rover Pregame Show on Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network. Satyar Shah with Craig McEwen. Canucks playing out the stretch, four games remaining on the season, getting played in five nights starting this afternoon. Matinee action. We can call it a pre-playoff appetizer. Your Canucks taking on the Edmonton Oilers, who are playoff bound before the postseason gets going later this evening, round one of the Stanley Cup playoffs. You want to get your thoughts in? You can do so to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. If you want to grab a phone line, you can do so as well, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. Sat with C-Mac. And C-Mac, well, at least the beautiful Saturday morning, and we get some matinee hockey action to whet our palates before the postseason begins this evening.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it, Sat, in the sense for the first time in NHL history, there's going to be playoffs starting when regular season games are being concluded. And we know this COVID season has been really tough on a lot of teams, especially the Canucks when they're hit with this. But there is nothing better, in my opinion, than the first round of the NHL playoffs. And I'll be interested to see, like last year, I don't know what your thoughts were going into the bubble, the big break, and I wasn't sure where the hockey was going to be. And we talked that it could take a while for the teams to catch up, but the intensity, the excitement, the animosity that builds in the first round, it's right. This just kind of wets our whistle, this game here leading into the playoffs, to see some of the best hockey. As I said, the first round to me is everyone's just been playing all year long, regular season, trying to get ready for it. They let loose. It's physical. It's fast. It's a level of hockey that we haven't seen before. So I can't wait for the playoffs to start this afternoon, but I also can't wait to see a few things here with the Canucks and Oilers as well.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot still to be kind of determined when it comes to this hockey club. I know the biggest questions are off the ice, C-Mac, and I know fans are always asking about that. And we know that a decision has not yet been made on the futures of both head coach Travis Green, who does not have a contract beyond the season, and perhaps even general manager Jim Benning. So those big questions, well, we're not going to really find out much until the season comes to an end after Wednesday of next week when the Canucks play their final game against the Calgary Flames. But in these final four games here, especially on the back end, there is a little bit of jockeying for position, at least for the rankings heading into training camp next season. We saw that Ole Olevi got a chance to draw back into the lineup the other night against Calgary. Not a great night for him. He draws back out tonight. Jalen Chatfield and Rathbone come in. No Naismith, no Ole Olevi. And we'll talk about Naismith sitting out and perhaps what that means for some veteran defensemen having to be rotated out of the blue line. But especially when it comes to Rathbone and Ole Olevi, I haven't sold all my stock on Olevi. I think he still has a long way to go with his skating, C-Mac, to kind of turn that corner and be an everyday player in the NHL. But we have to give credit to him coming this far after it looked like he may never get to this stage after all the injuries he's had, despite being the fifth overall pick back in 2016. But I don't think it's going out on a limb to say that Jack Rathbone, in his limited time already, has probably risen above Olevi in those rankings to jockey for position next year in camp.
Yeah, Bick and I talked about this when Rathbone came in, that he just pops, doesn't he? Like, in a word, in watching him, how he skates, how aggressive he is, his confidence. When I try to judge Olevi, I guess trying to give him, as you said, the bit of the benefit of the doubt of those injuries and where he's come from. I'll be completely honest. I didn't see him enough before the injuries to know if he was, just an above average skater. That is the one troubling area. But I watched some stuff sat with him, and the way he sees the ice, that can pass the puck, offensively, when he's set up in the other team's zone, he has a pretty good shot. He runs the point. So there's some stuff to like about there. And we have seen in the past players improve their skating. We have seen players get a little quicker at the NHL level. They do the work in the offseason and they keep building. And in Olevi's case, the fact of the matter is that progression, or him being able to work on those types of things in the offseason, to judge him fairly, and as long as Jim Benning's here, I'm sure he's going to get a lot of runway to do that, we're going to have to see him next year, and can he take a stride? Where in Rathbone's case, he comes in and, you know, looks really good right away. And you know the old saying, you can't teach speed in other sports. Like, mm-hmm. you just can't. I just think some people are naturally gifted as skaters, and he has shown that so far. Whether he can handle the rigors of an 82-game schedule being a regular night in, night out, defensively, he has to work on some things. That again, time will tell. But he does jump off the page or the ice, so to speak, when you watch him play.
No, he does, right? And I think those things are very important, especially with the way the league is trending, as you mentioned. That skating is an absolute necessity nowadays. The days of being a good stay-at-home defenseman that can move the puck out and clear the front of the net but not be the fastest guy, it doesn't work anymore, C-Mac, right? Like, you have to have that, you have to reach that baseline of skating and speed to be able to make a difference in the NHL. But I think it's really interesting because personally, C-Mac, I'm penciling in Jack Rathbone into the top six D group next season. Like, I don't know if he'll be a top four guy, but I feel comfortable putting him into that top six group. And I can see a pathway where when it comes to the offensive minutes and at least that offensive ability, he can replace Alex Edler's role in that, even if he doesn't play over 20 minutes or whatever. The issue here is replacing what Alex Edler does in that shutdown role and also on the PK. I think you can piece it together as far as, okay, Rathbone can't replace everything Edler does, but can he replicate or perhaps give you a bit more offensively in those similar minutes if you shelter him a bit? So you don't have to go and replace Edler and find a guy that can do everything Edler does, or at least better than Edler does at a younger age, to replace that top four defenseman. But if Rathbone can give you those offensive minutes, does it make it easier to find somebody in free agency or via trade, or maybe even Edler comes back on a cheap one-year deal and just use him for the things that you want, and that's killing penalties and playing more of a limited shutdown role?
It's interesting. I am still on the fence when it comes to, listen, I love the way he skates. He looks or reminds me of Quinn Hughes. He's not totally the same player, but, you know, same sort of build, same size, moves and skates well. I've tried to mull this over my brain. You know, too much of a good thing maybe isn't always the best. And can you have two diminutive defensemen, and let's use that word because they're not the tallest guys in the world, they're not the most physical guys in the world, they skate real well, but playing against big, tough, strong forwards are going to get knocked around and pushed around, especially defensively. Can you have two of those guys in your lineup? I don't know, Sat, for me, watching a lot of hockey, and again, I agree with you about the stay-at-home defenseman, and you know, I was joking, thinking of Dana Murzen back in the day, you know, big guy who just cleared right. The front of the net, right? You're right. You have to have a level of skating that is you know, really good. The thing about watching Jolevi, he doesn't skate poorly forwards, in my opinion. And I don't know if the backward skating, some of that is the hip or some of the injuries had. So I'm not so ready maybe to kind of give up on him right now. But when it comes to Rathbone and Hughes per se, I don't know what your thoughts are. I think I know you're going to tell me that you can have both those guys, but are they too similar? And are you, when you get your pairs out there, do you have enough right now to complement them, or are you going to have to really go out and revamp your defense?
Well, here's the thing. To me, you can have those two guys. Why not? I mean, for instance, we look at the Boston Bruins, right? And the blue line they had. And this is a team that's gotten to the Stanley Cup final a number of different years. And yeah, we always point to guys like Zdeno Chara. The man's an absolute tree, right? But they had guys like Matt Grizzlick playing big roles on that blue line when they went to the Cup a couple years ago. He played 20 games in the postseason. He is 5'9". They had Torrey Krug on that blue line, who was also 5'9". And those guys have gotten pretty much to the pinnacle with a blue line like that. So I don't have an issue with having one or two guys who are a bit diminutive. It's more about filling out the rest of your roster. And if we want to point to precedent, we've seen numerous instances where teams have had those defensemen that aren't very big and had success. It's about that overall mix. I think we get caught up oftentimes talking about, well, there's one guy who's too small, there are two guys who are too small. And if you have the rest of your blue line, say, be a bit, you know, smallish and not physical, that can be an issue. To me, it's who you pair those guys with. So I'm completely fine having both those guys. It's more about balancing them out with having the right traits that those guys do not possess.
But currently, with the way the Canucks are constructed, with people who are under contract, Schmidt and Myers, okay, so do those two complement what you're trying to do in this case? You know, you talked about going and getting Edler on a cheap deal, bringing him back, because I do think there's value to your point about what he can do defensively, what he can do on the PK. So it's finding that that mix of making sure the yin and the yang. Listen, Chris Tanev was great here, and he covered up a lot of mistakes and that type of defenseman. But, you know, could the Canucks or can the Canucks go out and do that? I guess it all remains to be seen what maybe Seattle does, if anyone's exposed or taken or not. But that's the thing for me, is that yin and yang. Is you're right, the Bruins used those two smallish defensemen to their advantage, but they also had the package or the pairing that really works well. And I don't know right now, you know, Myers, we won't call him Char, but he's big. And personally, you know, I'm a Tyler Myers supporter. I think he's probably been the best defenseman since coming out of COVID for them. And he's a guy that if you ask other players who they don't want to play against, it's him. Yes, he makes mistakes. Yes, when he tries to go outside himself, he doesn't do well. So Myers pairing with one of the goals, fine. But Schmidt maybe pairing, you know, with some, I don't know, Sat. Like, as I said, I look at that and that's my concern with, you know, kind of just anointing or putting Rathbone in right away without looking at the overall picture of those complementary pairings that you have on the blue line.
A lot of reaction on our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. Leaf Roland, even back in the day, you could have Rafalski and Paul Coffey on the same blue line, and that was a much bigger league. It really does come down to how much those guys can contribute too, right? And if you do make the blue line better, hey, maybe it doesn't make them unstoppable come playoff time, but what are we comparing the two? The bar this season or being a Stanley Cup contender next season? So I think a guy like Rathbone, if he continues his progression and comes in and plays the way he's played, at least in a small sample over a full season next year, I think that's an improvement, C-Mac, on what we've seen on this back end this season.
Yep.
Because as good as Edler has been in the past, he's really struggled this year, right? And hey, it's not his fault. He's in his mid-30s. He's playing tough minutes. He's playing big minutes, too, in a truncated schedule. His skating's not that quick. So, yeah, there are moments where he gets exposed a lot more. If you have a guy like him on the third pair, well, then all of a sudden you're not as concerned about the lack of mobility. But my question here, too, is if Alex Edler is back, is that head coach, whoever that's going to be, Travis Green or another veteran coach next season, are they going to resist the urge to not play Alex Edler more than he's capable of? And by extension, is Alex Edler still going to be your best option to play top 4 minutes for you next season?
Yeah, and that's the trick, isn't it, Sat? Like, his history, his experience, it all tells you that he's a guy who can be counted on. So when coaches get into trouble with younger players who are, you know, making the mistakes that younger players do for their development and growth, and that all comes with that package. Yeah, how much do you rely or go back to the old guard and go to Edler? Hey, go out there. And then he gets exposed even more on that front because another year older, a little slower. I mean, hey, the smarts to play defense too. A lot of defensemen, you know, hang around for a while. It's a position, as we've all talked about before, you and I have on the show, in the sense of it takes longer for defensemen to develop than forwards at the National Hockey League level. But once they get those smarts or those tricks, if you want, of the trade, so to speak, they can use them to their advantage as they slow down or they get a little bit older. But this game is so fast now, and you look at, you know, if you get caught out there against a McDavid like you're going to maybe see tonight, I worry a bit on Edler's front that whoever the coach is, you have to put someone in a role, and if his role is a third pairing guy who kills some penalties for you and all that sort of stuff, I think that's fine. But you're right, the temptation though for a coach, mm-hmm. when things start going bad with a younger player maybe struggling a bit, well, let's just put Alex there because he's done it before. Over time, those players as they age can't do what they used to do.
Well, and you know what happens sometimes too is these types of players, you know, when you have a head coach that's used to them or at least has the urge to go with them, what teams oftentimes do is they remove that player from the equation so the coach doesn't have to resist the urge to play that guy, right?
Yeah.
We've seen that in different instances where they're like, yeah, listen, we like this guy, but we really have to get rid of this guy, not because we don't like him, but it's because we want to allow the other guys to grow. We want to take away a temptation for a veteran head coach or whoever else to rely on this guy too much when we're trying to bring these other guys along. So I think that's going to be the tricky thing with Alex Edler here. But to your point, if you don't bring Alex Edler back and you're trying to improve your team next season, trade is probably the better avenue. Because looking at free agency, there really isn't a lot there, right, C-Mac? I mean, yeah, there are some guys that are really intriguing and good, but You're not going to be able to pay Dougie Hamilton what he's looking for. And as good as a guy as David Savard is playing the right side, you saw what the premium was to acquire him. Can you even get into the market to sign him as a free agent? And also, he's going to be nearing his 30s and be in his 30s, in his early 30s when you sign him to a contract anyways. So I don't think it's an easy solution here to replace Alex Edler next season. And that's something this team has been grappling with for years now, C-Mac.
Yeah, and on the Dunbar Lumber text line, Leaf Hater Steve says, if you have to choose between Edler and Hamonic, as much as I love Edler, I'd go Hamonic. Yeah, I don't disagree, you know, from an age and what Hamonic's been able to do. But turning the page from an Alex Edler, you know, we saw it this year, Sat, didn't we, when Markstrom and Tanev left the dressing room and they talked a bit about the void of leadership. And as quiet as Alex might be when you go to interview him or talk to them, I know that internally he is a leader on that hockey team. Not the most vocal guy, but a guy who's been around. So by losing him and his experience, you know, is that going to impact or hurt you? Because, you know, let's be honest, the new players like Schmidt and that have talked about how tough COVID is when you come to a new team. So you go and acquire a guy and let's hope everything opens up and it's normal next year. And when teams are, you know, on the road, they can go out of their hotel room. And listen, it's not the worst thing in the world to be in a five-star hotel, but when you're kind of locked in there for a lot, you know, it grinds and wears on you because you can't do the normal things. It's not like a peewee hockey team in the spring when they go on a tournament and the parents lock them in their room and tell them they can't go in the pool and they can't do this and that. These guys have lived that. They're past that. They know what it's like to go on a road trip in the NHL. So losing Edler from a leadership point of view is also something I think, Sat, that should be considered.
Yeah.
Hey, you just can't keep a guy around because he's good in the room. But in his case, the pros might outweigh the cons to kind of go, okay, Alex, if you can give us a really sweethearted deal here, because to your point, they're not going to be able to pay a Hamilton. They just don't have the room to do that. The trade idea really intrigues me. And that's where, like, listen, I'm not talking about giving up on Rathbone right now, but at the same token, maybe you got to package someone like him who's shown a little pop here and risk that by bringing in something that you need more on the back end.
It all depends on who you're getting, what age range. Like, I'm never against trading a young defenseman as long as you're getting a young defenseman under control back in return, right? So yeah. I'm not against that, you know, just straight out of hand. But even if you bring Edler back, there's still room for Rathbone and Edler to coexist on the same back end. Or if you don't bring Edler back, somebody else will come in to exist with Rathbone too at the same time. It also comes down to what you think your ETA is for this team to contend. And the other one is interesting because he is a legacy player. He has played every single one of his games as a Vancouver Canuck drafted by this team. He's sitting on 99 goals, has all these records. And it's hard sometimes for organizations to let guys like that go, even if they feel like it. But I do have a question about Edler himself. And yeah, it'll depend on the direction of the team and what happens. And perhaps, you know, he may want to stay here anyways. But I don't think he had a desire to leave, as evidenced by, you know, him not waiving his no-trade clause, C-Max, signing that two-year extension when he could have gotten more years in free agency a couple years back. He really wanted to stay. He's got family ties here. His wife's from here. They have family here. He doesn't want to leave Vancouver. But if Vancouver's not the place for you to win, and you're 35, and you only have a year or two left, is this the time that he might think about giving it a shot on a 1 or 2 year deal elsewhere, kind of the same way Matthias Olin did? And Olin was younger, signed that big contract with the Tampa Bay Lightning, of course, right? But sometimes, you know, those guys may have to move on if they really want to win a Stanley Cup again. And I wonder if Edler will consider that idea. As much as we talk about bringing Edler back, does he have a desire maybe to play his final year or two in a situation where he might have a chance to win a Stanley Cup?
Yeah, I'm curious, Sat, like, that's an interesting point with Edler and whether he wants to move here, because he is comfortable with his family. He loves it, I'm sure, in Vancouver. It's his home. He's been here quite a while. But chasing it and going somewhere else intrigues me, because let's be honest, he'd probably get more money going somewhere else. Like, here the Canucks are going to really ask him to, you know, hey, can you give us a sweetheart of a deal here, because we're really up against it. We got this Hughes and Pettersson stuff we have to deal with. So I don't know that he's a guy that's all about the money, because he's done well, but you're right. Combined with the opportunity to perhaps win a cup, and again, there's no guarantees, but you're going to be closer somewhere else than Vancouver next year, and the fact that he would get more money and maybe going to Tampa Bay, it could be worse places in the world to live. And I'm not suggesting he's going to follow what Olin did, but if he could find a spot, I wouldn't be surprised that if he does test it and not just stay blindly here in Vancouver and go after it and say, hey, I've got like maybe 2 years left to do this. Let's see what happens.
And again, it all depends on who's making the decisions here for the Canucks. But one thing I know was discussed when Edler signed his 2-year contract to stay in Vancouver was when your deal is over, you're going to be 35. And for players who are plus 35 on short-term deals in the NHL, you can bonus up those contracts. You can sign a guy to a 2-year deal with a $2 to $3 million bonus. So you can kind of, you can get around the cap a little bit that way as well. So all of a sudden, a guy like Alex Edler for a contender, if he's willing to sign a bonus late in short-term deal, that gets more intriguing because if he hits his bonus as well, you could kick those over to the following year if you're capped out. So I do think with Edler, it's an interesting situation when it comes to his contract next year, whether it's Vancouver or elsewhere. Lots of reaction on the Dunbar Lumber text inbox. This one unsigned. If they bring Edler back, I will never go to another game. So I think this person, C-Mac, has had his fill of Alex Edler here for the past decade and a bit.
I would counter with, okay, so you got a ticket for opening night. We haven't been at a hockey game in over a year. So you're not going because Edler's, you know, in the lineup. I'm guessing that, you know, I'm not going to another game until I experience another game. Maybe that would have been a better one.
Yeah. Aftar G, if you bring Edler back, let him be backup goalie. I mean, you know what? He may want to do that. He may be all about being a backup goalie. Jay in East Van, this is an interesting question here. Am I wrong, or is Nate Schmidt not a fit on this team? He seems a bit diminutive, just a vet when he takes off on his offensive forays. No one else on the team seems to know what's going on. He's often outplayed in his own zone, and his lippy personality doesn't seem to jive with the more serious demeanor of guys like Bo, Edler, and Myers. And what seems like identity management is attempting to create, whatever identity the management team is trying to create here with Nate Schmidt. I think Nate Schmidt, when you look at his overall season, has probably been better than he gets credit for. But I don't think Jay is wrong in saying that it has been an awkward fit. And I'm not saying that they're going to trade Nate Schmidt or that he necessarily wants out. But when it comes to his situation, C-Mac, I do think that from the player's perspective, it hasn't gone the way he wanted. I'm not sure the team has liked it the way they had hoped. He's a guy to keep an eye on this offseason. I'm not saying they're going to trade him. I know Friedman mentioned teams called and asked about Nate Schmidt during the season not that long ago, so we know that teams have inquired about him at the very least. But I think that's something to keep an eye on this offseason. How's that fit going to work, and what happens? The issue here, of course, is, if you don't bring him back, how are you replacing that top four role?
Yeah, and that's the challenge with this Canucks team. Because again, let's say you trade him, move him out, and you sign Edler. We've just spent the last 15 minutes talking about how we don't want Alex Edler in a top four role. So who is that person that slides in and plays there that you can afford and keep around? Maybe it is a Hamonic. You go after him and try and keep him here. But yeah, Schmidt is interesting. He has that great personality when he's behind the microphone. Talk, you know, how hard it was to fit into a team when he wasn't here, and you know, also talk glowingly about how good this Canucks team and hard they were to play against. But if you even look at the age situation where he is and the trajectory of this hockey team, he might be a chip that you could move at a sizable salary when you have to make a hockey trade and try and bring something in, that he might be someone that they look, as you said, to keep an eye on this offseason.
Yeah, I would keep a very close eye on Nate Schmidt in that situation. A lot of reaction on the Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. Money isn't everything to Swedish players. Swedes live by the credo Lagom, where happiness is moderation. Burnaby Kirby. I like that. There's actually a book called Lagom.
Hey, do you subscribe to Lagom? I've never heard of that before.
Did you rag the puck a little bit there, C-Mac? Because I'm back now.
You back? Yeah. No, sorry. I actually stopped because I thought it was me. I was looking at my computer. It's the one thing about working from home. Like, it is so disconcerting when you hear that silence, because I can't see you in the studio and I can't see Lena working the board and all that sort of stuff. So what I asked you was the Lagom. Do you subscribe to that? Like, I've never heard that saying before. It's quite interesting, where happiness is moderation. We should put that up on the wall at the studio when we all come back.
Do you really want? I don't think the boss wants that, because when you ask me to do more, I'd be like, I'll point to and say moderation, C-Mac. Moderation. I've done enough this week. So I'm
but
not
I'll
sure
point
that's
to and say happiness. Happiness. I'll say happiness, buddy. Happiness. We're doing a great job. Everyone would kill for our jobs. Happiness.
Of course. I'm super happy. But I'm saying, if you want to put moderation up there as a boss, sometimes it's easy for an employer to be like, if you want me to do more, don't forget your creed of moderation here, C-Mac. That's all.
All right. I will say then I'll say counter with the happiness part of it.
We'll be happy about it. Keep getting your thoughts into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox 650-650. We're going to talk to Brendan Batchelor and Corey Hirsch set up Canucks Edmonton Oilers puck drop coming up just after 12:30. Satyar Shah, Craig McEwen, and this is the Land Rover pregame show on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Getting you set for all the action. This is the Land Rover pregame show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network. Here's Satyar Shah.
Welcome back to the Land Rover pregame show. Visit your local Land Rover authorized retailer for offers. Land Rover above and beyond. Satyar Shah with Craig McEwen. Canucks taking on the Edmonton Oilers. Puck drop coming up just after 12:30. We have our game day roundtable coming up with Brendan Batchelor and Corey Hirsch in a few minutes. But before we get to all that, we'll bring you the latest on the Vancouver Canucks tonight. Well, this afternoon, I should say, taking on the Oilers. Some changes on the back end. Thatcher Demko does get the start yet again for the Canucks between the pipes. Ole Olevi and Jalen Chatfield. Well, no, Ole Olevi and Nate Schmidt are drawing out tonight. We have Jack Rathbone and Jalen Chatfield drawing back in this afternoon. I got to get used to saying this afternoon, C-Mac.
Yeah, it's weird to think that there's a hockey game on today at this time, especially involving the Canucks. Considering the fact that, you know, just around the corner and later are the NHL playoffs are kicking off. Nothing that we've ever seen before, but hey, in this COVID situation and in the past year, I think we've seen a lot of new things and probably will continue to see changes as we move forward.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, on the back end, that's where you're going to see the changes for now. Now, once you get through tomorrow, I think we are going to see guys like Will Lockwood and Jonah Gadjevich, like Travis Green kind of outlined in his media availability the other day, the Canucks cannot play those guys because they're out of recalls and they're here on emergency. So they need an injury in the top forward group for somebody to draw in, like a Gadjevich or a Lockwood. Now, when the Utica season ends tomorrow, those players will become eligible. So the final couple of games here for the Canucks, you will see Jonah Gadjevich and Will Lockwood, hopefully. But for now, well, we only look at changes on the back end. But one of the things I want to ask you about as well, we talked about the defense quite extensively in that first segment. Looking at this forward group now, is there anybody here that you want to see more of over these final four games? Is there anybody here that has piqued your interest or you want to pique your interest, whether it's a veteran or a young player, to show you something here before the season ends?
Well, we've talked a lot about, you know, Nils Höglander. So I think we've seen enough of him, Sat, in the sense of he's had a really impressive year and been one of the lone bright spots. Highmore is a guy that I want to continue to see how he plays and if he can be, you know, impactful. Where he's playing right now is not realistic, but, you know, just as a player who finally scored a goal for the Canucks and where he's going and how he fits in and works with the board. And the other one for me, Sat, would be Boyd down the middle. I mean, the Canucks are going to need some help in certain spots next year, and center is one of them. They're going to have to find someone. Like, listen, I'll be honest. Jimmy Vesey skates really well. He's big and all that, but I don't know if it's COVID. I just haven't been impressed by him. Like, I've turned the page on that, but those two, Highmore and Boyd, are the guys that I would want to keep an eye on here over the next few games.
Well, Highmore did get his first as a Vancouver Canuck. The question with him, for me more than anything, and Bick and I talked about this quite a bit during the intermission of the last game when Highmore got his first goal, can he reach enough of a baseline production-wise to play in the NHL in a fourth-line role? Because so far, he only has 5 assists, 5 goals in his career. He's played 87 games, and he only has 13 points, I believe. That's not good enough production for an everyday fourth-line player. But he has speed, can kill some penalties, has some traits. But can he just score enough here, C-Mac? That's my question. Because if he can bring the things he brings, but also be a 20-point guy as a fourth-liner, then all of a sudden, he's somebody I'm intrigued by. But if he can't give you that baseline of points, then it's really not moving the needle at all.
Well, the thing is, when I look at the bottom six and that fourth line, for a guy like Highmore to be successful, you mean, you saw it the other night, he's playing with some really good players and he deflects the puck, goes in. I'm not suggesting he's going to get top six type players on the fourth line, but he needs some more help around him. He's not going to carry a line. He's not going to Tyler Mott it and go out there, in my opinion. But if you look at what Toronto's had success with a Joe Thornton or a Spezza, these guys who used to be top players and they moved down now because maybe they're just not as quick, but they still have some offensive ideas and creativity. Highmore needs to play with someone on a fourth line, in my opinion, the way he plays in his aggressive skating. He needs a almost a veteran guy like that so that at least they can put him in a spot to succeed and put some points on, because he's not going to do it himself. He's not going to, you know, drive around and skate by guys and go to the net and that. So in my opinion, the improvement of a fourth line with him on it with a few better players, I think we would see more from him with the opportunity provided him.
Yeah, and I think we'll see what he does here. He's going to be vying for a spot next year in that bottom six mix. They need a complete overhaul. Can he be part of the solution next season? Well, let's bring in Brendan Bassler and Corey Hirsch, our play-by-play and color duo here, into the conversation. Canucks taking on the Edmonton Oilers in Edmonton just after 12:30 Pacific time. And Batch, thanks for joining us here, man. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you guys?
We're doing well. And how is Hershey today?
I'm great. It was beautiful outside. I went and I had a nice little walk down by the beach. Little Zen time. I'm ready to roll, Sat. Let's roll this.
Oh, I'm with you. I mean, what a beautiful day to get things going here for a Canucks afternoon game. As C-Mac and I have been talking about it, it's a bit of a NHL playoff appetizer before the playoffs actually begin. And how odd is this, Hershey? I mean, you know, you're a guy who played in the National Hockey League. I don't think we've ever seen this before, where the playoffs begin and you're playing out regular season games down the stretch. How odd is that going to be for the guys playing tonight, knowing that once their game ends, the playoffs do begin?
Yeah, it's kind of, I would be a little bit embarrassed. It's if I was playing right now, it would be like, oh, you know, you'd be wishing you were in the playoffs, and it's almost a little bit embarrassing, I think, for if you're a player in the locker room. Let's just hope it never happens again, because it's not a good look on anybody. It's not a good look on the league. It's not a good look on the teams. But hey, they've got to get the games in, it's for draft position now.
Yeah, absolutely it is. The Canucks can finish anywhere between 22nd and 29th in the league the rest of the way, depending on how they go. They'd have to lose out to be as low as 29th in terms of having a chance to pick that much higher. But at the same time, you know, these are professionals, Hershey, and I'm sure you can speak to this as well. These are guys that are still going out there to win this game, even though it doesn't mean a whole lot to them, even though it doesn't mean a whole lot to the Oilers on the other side, as a club that already knows that they're starting the playoffs on Wednesday night against the Winnipeg Jets, and they'll be thoroughly preparing for that. One thing I was interested to see, though, is that Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl are both expected to play in this game today. Do you think those guys would have had a hand in that decision, where they would have said, no, we want to play, we don't want to sit out? And why would a player like Connor McDavid want to play in a game like this?
Yeah, I think they would have. I think Dave Tippett would have asked them, or would have had a conversation discussing and saying why they would be in the lineup. And I think it's a good decision, because I've said this before, when guys sit out, it just creates animosity through the team, because other guys have ego too. And they're like, well, why, if he's sitting out, why can't I sit out? And Connor McDavid's a different story. If you're an Edmonton player, you would understand it. But, you know, let's say, you know, Nugent Hopkins sits out, or Puljujarvi or something like that along with them. There's other guys that are play roles on this team too, like Jujhar Khera. And it just creates animosity. So, you win as a team, you lose as a team, you die as a team. And that's kind of the attitude that Connor McDavid and Draisaitl will probably have.
And quickly, guys, the Oilers, it looks like, are going to use this game as an opportunity to get some guys into the lineup that haven't played in a while. Slater Cuckoo's expected to play. He's been out since February 20th with a collarbone injury. Joachim Nygaard, Gaetan Haas. So they are rotating players through, but in terms of the top players at the top of their lineup, we expect to see everyone for Edmonton here today.
All right, so I let Batch interrupt me. Hershey, I was going to jump all over you on this. So
why?
Connor McDavid and Draisaitl, yes, they said to their coach, they don't want to get rusty. They want to play one game in a week. They won't play until next Wednesday against Winnipeg.
Yep.
What is the reward here? Like, the risk is massive to me. If Connor McDavid gets just clipped the wrong way at his speed and the way he plays, this does make absolutely no sense to me at all to risk losing your top two guys going into a playoff series against a Jets team that knows that, you know, basically, in my opinion, if you shut down one or both of those guys, they have a great chance of winning. I don't see this. Hey, take a week off, Connor. Rest up. The Bruins sat like 14 players the other day to get ready for their playoffs. That's a veteran, smart hockey team that's been to Stanley Cup finals and knows the grind that's coming. I totally disagree with you guys on this front. Like, I think this is a crazy decision by the Oilers, and I just don't see the reward out of it. And all I see is the risk of possibly, not on purpose, but, you know, McDavid gets hit or tweaked or something like that. I don't get it, Hershey. Like, I know
yeah.
what you're talking about with the team. Forget Jujar. Like, this guy's a superstar. Like, put him in the press box. Yeah. Let him rest up. Let him get ready for Winnipeg.
Yeah, and that's why I said if it's Connor McDavid or Draisaitl as a team, you're like, okay, you understand. But if it's, that's why I was saying, if it's Puljujärvi or Nugent Hopkins, you're like, huh, as another player, I'm just as valuable. But Connor McDavid, they would understand. Here's the thing. I bet you they only play power play, and they play like a couple of shifts a period. I don't see them playing a regular shift. I see them, playing a no-hitter. But I get your point. I get your point. I would have sat them if I was a coach. But some guys, they like to play. They like to play. But I would have sat them as well. If you're the Canucks, you know, like if the Canucks were going to make the playoffs, you'd probably sit, you know, Pettersson and Hughes or something, right? So, I hear what you're saying, but I don't see them getting. You can control their minutes if you're Dave Tippett.
You can. The question I have, too, though, about the Edmonton Oilers here is that's a team that really struggled last year in that playoff bubble, right? And Dave Tippett was also the head coach. They played the Chicago Blackhawks. They were soundly beaten in that series. How much of that do you think comes into Dave Tippett being maybe a bit concerned that if he doesn't have his guys tuned up, they may have another letdown come playoff time?
Yeah, I'm sure it will, although, you know, I don't think we will expect a letdown from Connor McDavid. You know, if anything is going to sink the Oilers, it's the rest of their lineup outside of those top two guys that's going to give them issues. And, you know, obviously they're going to need Mike Smith to be very good going forward. But I would imagine that Dave Tippett has to be concerned, although the circumstances last year were very different. You just had, the one exhibition game before going into, that series, the play-in round. And that was a Chicago Blackhawk team that backed into that situation and only got to play in the bubble because the bubble happened. They would have absolutely not been a playoff team otherwise, but they had some veteran savvy. They had guys that had playoff experience, and it was a shorter series too. So there were lots of things that worked against Edmonton. But Hershey, I would imagine that Dave Tippett would at least have that on his mind ahead of the playoffs this year, how much they disappointed in the bubble when there was a lot expected of them after the regular season they'd had as well.
Yeah, I wouldn't even look at the bubble. I wouldn't even think about it as last year. Connor McDavid's on a whole nother level right now, and so is Draisaitl. This team is a little bit deeper. They're a little bit better. Darnell Nurse is another year older. They've added Tyson Barrie. I think this team is way better than what they put in the bubble last year. Yamamoto's got a full year. And like I said, Connor McDavid's on another level. If I'm a team out there, I'm looking at Edmonton, and I do not want to play Edmonton. If I'm the Leafs, you're hoping Edmonton gets knocked out by Winnipeg because, I think two of the top teams in the league are now Toronto and Edmonton. And if Connor McDavid, he was unstoppable. Like, he was teams tried to stop him, and they couldn't. And I haven't seen anything like that since the Gretzky and Lemieux days. I really haven't. Guys that can just dominate like that. And they and Mario's got two Stanley Cups, and Gretzky's got, I think, five. So Connor McDavid's going to get a run at a Stanley Cup eventually, and it might just be this year.
Well, and Hershey, how much more impressive is this season from McDavid because he's doing it in the modern game. And not to take anything away from what Mario and Wayne did, but at the same time, this is a faster game. This is a, you know, a game that looks a lot different than it did 20, 30 years ago. The goaltending has really taken another step. And yet Connor McDavid still was as dominant as he was this year.
You know what? There's so many, it's tough to compare because the skates weren't as good back then. You know, when Gretzky played, the sticks were wooden, so you couldn't shoot as hard. But the game is faster. And then back then, have you ever watched Mario, like, have three guys on his back and there's no penalty? Like, Connor McDavid has a chance to freewheel because they've made the rules what they are. So that's where it's tough to compare because it is the modern game, but is it harder than it was before just because it's faster? There's no hooking. There's no, you know, there's not nearly as much intimidation in the game with fights. Mario would have like three guys on his back, one hand on his stick and still score. You know, Gretzky had to play with wooden sticks and skates and equipment that wasn't as good, even though the goalies weren't played a different style. So it's so hard to compare, but he's right up there with the top five players ever if he continues this on a path. But like everybody says, you got to win to be in that conversation. So Connor McDavid, unfortunately, if you don't win a Stanley Cup, what was your career like? Yeah, you can get all the points, but if you don't win a cup, you know, what is the answer to that?
So Hershey, you're the Winnipeg Jets. You're preparing for Connor McDavid. No, Jerry Butler, the shadow, still isn't in the league. but what do you do with him? How do you, you're not going to stop him, but how do you contain him to a point where you're successful? I mean, does it fall to Hellebuck to stand on his head? Like how do you, a player that great, that good, skates that well, plays that fast, how do you go about trying to contain him in the playoffs?
There's a few ways, but one is he's going to get his points, 1 or 2 points a game, right? So you've got to limit him to as many points as you can or to as least amount of points as you can because he's going to get his points. So there's no point in trying to get this guy and shut him completely down. Not going to happen. So what you got to make sure is that the other lines don't score. You have to absolutely make sure nobody else, they don't get any secondary scoring from anybody else. And then, obviously, you know, McDavid gets 2 points in Draisaitl, and you get 3 goals, you win the game. But how you do that is you got to take away time and space. You have to be, you don't shadow them, but it's going to have to be a concerted team effort to take away and give him as little space as possible. Everyone's like, well, why don't you just hit him? Why don't you just fight him? And all? You can't. He's too fast. Like, you can't hit him. He knows how to dodge hits. You know, and the last thing is coaching matchups. Paul Maurice is going to have to play the coaching matchup game with Dave Tippett. But Dave Tippett, and this guy's got a, you know, he's no pushover. He's got a lot of games himself. But that's how I would say, Batch, to, you're going to have to shut down Connor McDavid.
Yeah, the team that gave the Oilers the most trouble this year, other than the Maple Leafs, was the Montreal Canadiens. And in talking to some people in Edmonton over the last couple of weeks, you know, players are never going to say who they want to face and who they don't want to face. But I think, you know, privately, some of these guys will be breathing a sigh of relief that they got Winnipeg in the first round, because the word was that Montreal had a lot of success, obviously earlier in the year before they had some injury issues against the Oilers. But what they did is they played them very physically, and particularly McDavid and Draisaitl. And you're right, McDavid's fast. They're elite players. You know, they're going to get their chances to score, and likely they are going to produce points. But if you can get in their kitchen, if you can try and use what is often an expanded rope that you get from the referees in the playoffs in terms of physicality to slow McDavid up that one little bit, or to ride him out of the play when you might get called for interference in the regular season, but officials may let it go in the playoffs, that's going to be a big factor in that series, is what the officiating standard looks like. And, you know, then as far as McDavid goes, he's such a great player that you have to hope that you can stay out of the box. So that's going to be a fine line to ride as well, because you want to try and play physical and get in his kitchen and slow him up and frustrate him. But at the same time, if you take penalties, if you're the Winnipeg Jets, that's a lethal power play. And that could single-handedly win the series for the Oilers if the Jets, you know, go to the box too much.
Yeah, you take penalties, you're done. You don't have a choice in this, especially with Winnipeg's power play and penalty kill. It has not been good, so you have to stay out of the box.
Guys, before we let you go, I just want to bring it back to the Canucks for one moment here, and it has to do with Nate Schmidt. He's coming out of the lineup for the game today, and we don't take it as a slight, and this is something that Travis did mention too, right, that they are going to rotate some of their defensemen, the veterans as well, over these final four games. What do you make of the season Nate Schmidt has had and how to best move forward with that defenseman?
Yeah, it's an interesting situation because certainly he hasn't been as big of a factor as people hoped he would be coming in at the start of the year. This is a guy that, you know, had 30-plus points the last three straight seasons, and, you know, obviously this is a shortened season. But that said, he's, you know, 15 points in 51 games, so he wasn't on a 30-point pace anyway. I don't know if you want to assess too much about what Nate Schmidt might be going forward based on this year because of everything that happened. He had to join a new team. He had a short training camp. He didn't have exhibition games. Everybody went through the COVID outbreak late in the year. So, you know, as much as it might be easy to look at Nate Schmidt and go, oh, you know, he's 29 now. He's going to be 30 soon. Maybe he's a guy that you don't want to be a part of it. I still would like to see more from Nate Schmidt. I'd like to give him a chance to come back in next year, Hershey, have a full training camp, you know, be more comfortable with the group and with guys that he's had a chance to play with throughout this season. Although Alex Edler has been his defense partner more often than not. And, you know, we don't know what Alex Edler's future is, but I don't know how much we should read into what Nate Schmidt can be as a player based on what he's done this year.
Yeah, I wouldn't be too concerned with him sitting out. We don't know if he's got a little injury or something either. So it's hard to say. I guess Travis will have to say whether or not he was a healthy scratch. But he's played pretty well down the stretch here. I've liked him and Myers. I think the right side has been good. I think they've struggled at times on the left side and on PK. And they got to make a decision on what to do with Edler down the stretch here. I don't think they should sit Edler. I'm of the opinion that it would be very disrespectful to Alex Edler, unless he's got a few injuries, Batch.
Yeah, and I'll talk to Travis Green about just that, what he plans to do with the blue line coming up later on in the Green Report, guys.
Well, we look forward to hearing that. That's coming up in about 15 minutes' time. Great, as always, gentlemen. Enjoy the sunshine for a few more minutes before you get to call this a wonderful hockey game coming up at 12:30.
Yep, thanks, boys.
And it's Slater Cuckoo, not Kuek Kuek. All right, you guys got that?
Yeah, who said that?
I think Shorty did, didn't he?
The long story short is if you Google how to pronounce Slater Cuckoo's name, there's a funny video of someone intentionally pronouncing it wrong. So when we've looked it up in the past, we've had to double check just to make sure. But it is Slater Cuckoo, and we do expect him to play for the Oilers today.
Yes, yep. I used to think it was Kokic as well before I was set straight some years back. So that's a mistake that is not that difficult to make. Thanks, gentlemen.
Yep, thank you.
That is Brandon Batchelor and Corey Hirsch. The Green Report, as Batch mentioned, coming up in about 15, 20 minutes' time here on Sportsnet 650. Satyar Shah, Craig McEwen, this is the Land Rover pregame show on Sportsnet 650. Get your thoughts in to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650, 650. And this text here, unsigned, tells you so much about the state of Vancouver hockey, given that this pregame roundtable on Vancouver radio has hardly talked about the Canucks at all. Well, we did start off with some Canucks talk. We spent some time on the Edmonton Oilers. The whole first segment, C-Mac, was on the Canucks and their blue line when we began the show at 11 a.m., but it is kind of the way this season has gone. A lot of these Canucks topics have pretty much been exhausted, more or less, and it is pretty much more of the same for these final four games here.
Yeah, and in a lot of ways, hockey fans, media, we're just waiting for some shoe to drop. We have no idea what that's going to be, but that, well, I guess the Rangers did it before the end of the year, but most likely something will happen once the season ends, and we're just kind of waiting wanting and, you know, looking at these games, okay, as an evaluation, how much, I mean, the last game was a no-hitter. I mean, really, yeah. you could tell both teams were out there. And hey, there's some chances and there's some entertaining stuff, right. But the intensity isn't there. So, yeah, we're looking at this as an evaluation, but also just waiting, wanting, and hoping that there's some news at the end of the season to at least start looking forward and turning the page to next year.
I think everybody really needs something to get excited about again with this team. Some sort of refresh needs to happen with this organization to get not only the fans invested in the market buying in, but also to get those the players themselves believing. And one of the things you always have to do too, C-Mac, and we'll continue this conversation, is you got to convince not only fans, but also the players that this is the place for you to win and to have success. So we'll build off that conversation and break down the game. Canucks, Edmonton Oilers, as the Land Rover pregame show continues on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Getting you set for all the action. This is the Land Rover pregame show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network. Here's Satyar Shah.
Welcome back to the Land Rover pregame show on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network. Satyar Shah, Wick, Craig McEwen, Canucks taking on the Edmonton Oilers in Alberta. Puck drop coming up in about 30 minutes time. And when it comes to the roster tonight, in case you missed it or in just tuning in, no changes up front. Thatcher Demko getting the start between the pipes for the Canucks yet again. But on the back end, Olli Olevi draws out of the lineup. We do have Jack Rathbone coming in, and Nate Schmidt is also coming out of the lineup in place of Jalen Chatfield. So those are the only real changes we're looking at when it comes to tonight's game here, C-Mac. We're still not going to see Jonah Gadjevich and Will Lockwood, because at this point, outside of trying to see more for some of those guys we mentioned, you mentioned Matthew Highmore, guys we've seen, but what we're really looking forward to is seeing some guys we haven't seen yet, and we still got to wait a bit longer to see those two guys, Will Lockwood and Jonah Gadjevich.
Yeah, the Canucks have used up all their recalls. Although I wonder if it wouldn't be like a wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Hey, Michaelis, you have a groin injury. What? You know, you're hurt. Get out of here. We want to put another guy in. But I don't think they're allowed to do that, Sat. I think that would be mistrustful or deceitful or whatever you want to call it. But I when you look at what's left in the Canucks schedule and what they have to play as the playoffs are going on, seeing a couple of those new young players, those young faces, and how they fit in, I'm not so sure that you're going to get a true representation of how they'll fare at the National Hockey League level, because Calgary and Vancouver, you know, probably won't be playing like it's game 7 of the Stanley Cup final over the next couple of days. But at the same token, it is exciting, and we've heard a lot about these players, and to see them now with NHL caliber players around them will be interesting and something that people can look forward to.
Yeah, and those are the things, right? And I know you also mentioned, and I know fans have been wondering too, texting in, I know Dan in Vancouver, what's your ideal management president combo moving forward here with the team? And those are the things here that we're going to find out. And I think that's the big picture question here, right? Because we can sit here and talk about, all right, this is what the Canucks should do at the draft, C-Mac. This is what they should do with free agency. These are the guys they should look for. But if there's going to be a change, whether it's coach, GM, both, or whatever the case is, then, you know, the moves that could happen could be a lot different. I mean, the people in charge of making decisions, well, they often have different visions, C-Mac, and we've been assuming, we've been operating under this regime and the way they think and the way they look at guys, and we're trying to figure out the roster, who's going to be back and who won't be back next season. Now, if that changes, of course, that dynamic is going to be completely different when it comes to how this roster gets evaluated and who could or could not be here long term.
Yeah, and when you look at things and you come in with fresh eyes and you're not tied to anyone and you didn't draft them or you didn't trade for them, you know, as a coach, you didn't go to a war with them. Yeah, you sometimes have to look at those things and decide, like, hey, I have a new vision, a new plan. The thing, you know, the texter puts in there, Dan, is, you know, the word of a president. I mean, in all reality, Sat, and I think we're probably on the same page of this since Trevor Linden left, there really has been a void at the top with the organization, in the sense of a buffer between, you know, the GM and owner, and someone who can, you know, have a conversation and put a vision and a plan in place, and then communicate that plan to people, whether in the media, the fans, and also ownership and the GM, and just get everything moving in the right direction. Because to your point earlier, where you said we just want some hope or to look forward to next season and to grasp onto something, sometimes that change or that move, because let's remember, when Trevor Linden was brought in here, mm-hmm. to take on that role, like, Rome was burning. Like, I've never seen the Canucks in more disarray, and it was crazy, and, you know, all the chants about fire this guy. Like, it was terrible. And immediately when he came in, there was calm. It was like, okay. Like, it's weird. I don't know how to explain it, but it was like everyone just kind of, okay, we're good now. We have someone there. So that's, mm-hmm. to me, where it's at. That, like, yeah, coaching changes, yeah, GM changes, all that sort of stuff. I would really like them to see a dynamic, smart, intelligent president come in to kind of man the ship and take it into the right direction.
You're right. It's about setting that vision, creating some alignment. And the biggest challenge, I think, GMs or presidents or whoever the top of that management structure is managing up to an owner as well. And that's not just something unique to Vancouver. That's unique to every single sport. And if you talk to a lot of people, whether it's in NHL or in other sports, the biggest challenge for a lot of those executives is to have alignment, right? Because, hey, when you spend a lot of money on owning a sports team, you have a certain level of expectations, right? And, hey, a lot of that is fair. And sometimes your domain experience as an owner, as much as you own the team, you may not quite know enough about the day-to-day, even though you think you might know. And this is something that every single ownership group goes through at some point. So it's really important to have that buffer, have that person that can really work hand-in-hand well and keep that, you know, owner happy to a large degree, keep them informed of where the plan is going, and try to keep that continuity moving forward. And that's not an easy thing to do, however, C-Mac. As much as we talk about it, that's a hard dynamic to find. But you're right. When it comes to having somebody with the organization, it goes beyond just making hockey decisions. It comes down to leadership and managing the entire group. And I think that's really what we're looking at here in this situation that has been lacking.
Yeah, and that piece of managing up, listen, the owner or the people who run this company, sometimes they just tell you to do things and they don't want your opinion. They don't want you to, not challenge, but offer up something different. They just want you to follow through, right or wrong, good or bad. But at the end of the day, they pay the bills. They're the ones that have lost, you know, we've read or seen upwards of $20 million this year. That's a lot of money. So when the owner says something or wants something done, you're right. It's that tricky ability to, I will say, placate the owner, but put the team into the direction that it should be going. Because at the end of the day, you know, when you do own these teams, and it's a vanity play for a lot of people, and I'm not suggesting that's the case with the Aquilinis, but I'm sure they take a lot of pride in owning the hockey team in the city that they're from. They have other businesses, the other ventures that are run differently. But this one in particular is so public that when they want something done, I believe they also want someone sometimes to just be a yes person and go, yeah, we'll do that, mm-hmm. boss, no problem. That's the tricky thing in sports, because you're right. When you hire a really good president or someone knows the hockey business and knows how to build championships, and again, there's no guarantee, as we saw in 2011, but bottom line, to have the security or the vulnerability as an owner, I guess, to allow someone else to take it and run with it, and you not have that say, that's tough for some of these guys who own these pro sports teams.
Well, because oftentimes they've gotten to the place they're at by making bold decisions, being on top of things, right, and being in charge. And, you know, sometimes it's difficult to go into a situation and kind of let that go, but that's really the situation you find yourself in that you have to do. And as far as, you know, the backlash this year, you talked about what happened, you know, the last time a change occurred with Mike Gillis. There's no fans in the building this year, right? And I think not having those fans in the building, we didn't have that angry voice potentially. We saw it outside. We saw it with banners flying in the skies. We see it on social media. Hey, we hear it on the postgame show, right? We see the text messages coming in. We see all that sort of stuff. But in terms of that heat, it's been very strong, C-Mac. But it's also been very strong without fans in the building. So I kind of wonder, if fans were in the building this year, how much higher could this kind of anger be registering on the meter, you think, than what it has been?
Yeah, it would be higher, Seth, because I mean, as much as we all love Twitter and you know, think that it's a good representation of the fan base, you know, let's not forget, and I've said this repeatedly, and this is an old man yelling at Cloud again, this is just me saying, it's a part of the fan base, it's not all the fan base. So sometimes when we get wrapped in and keep reading all that stuff on that, or even our text line. So you're right, with the masses of close to 20,000 people in there, it would be interesting to see where it is. I just wonder, Sat, though, in some way, shape, or form, have ownership given this year a pass? And I know that would piss off a lot of people, but have they looked at this and gone, man, with COVID, with us losing Pedersen, with you know the stoppage, we got off to a bad start. They didn't want to open their wallets at the beginning of the year, which was quite apparent because obviously they've lost a lot of money. Do they look at this year and just throw it in the garbage can and say, move on, do over, let's start going forward? That's not going to appease a lot of the fan base, but from an ownership point of view, because of the situation that the world has been in and we've been turned upside down, are they looking at it as like, yeah, we didn't really go all in this season, so we're not going to evaluate everyone's performance to the level that we normally would because it was just such a crazy year?
See, that's always a possibility, right? And that's why, as much as there's so much talk about what's happening, I keep going back to the point of a decision hasn't been made yet. And we've seen in this market before where we assume a decision has been made one way or another, it can change quickly, right? So I think it's very important to say a decision has not yet been made. I still kind of sit in that coin flip area. It can go either way at this point. I know PJ Patrick Johnson kind of mentioned he feels like a change could be coming here. I know others have mentioned that as well. So we'll ultimately see where this all goes towards. But more than anything, C-Mac, it comes down to what information do they have as an organization about fan interest heading into next season? And that is, how do season ticket holders feel? How does the investment look for this organization? I think those factors, more than anything, even if you want to give guys a clean slate next year, when it comes to the brand, C-Mac, that's usually that determines whether a change should happen or not. And if they're going through the process and they determine as an organization that their brand is taking a hit, then I don't think you can give Jim more leeway next season, even if you think there are a lot of things out of his control. It comes down to protecting the brand at one point.
Yeah, for sure. And I can only speak from experience of what we've had as a radio entity. But what we've seen as a business is kind of a bounce back this year, which is great. Yeah. I mean, last year, you remember, sports just died, hockey died, everything just stopped. And so businesses, fans, everyone kind of held on to their money. We're starting to see that come back. So in the Canucks case, you're right. When they now approach some of their season ticket holders and say, hey, it looks like, you know, Bonnie Henry said yesterday that, you know, perhaps there's going to be would you come back? Will you come back? If the masses go, yeah, I've sat on my money, I didn't pay this year. Some probably did and will get a bonus towards next year. But if there isn't this big hue and cry from them and they get, you know, their season ticket holders back without a huge pushback, then they might look at it as that. But You're right. Mining that information, that is so key, because again, as much as Twitter and our post-game show and the people who text in are important and are part of the fan base, they aren't all of the fan base. So those people, you know, I made the analogy yesterday and it was a bad one. I also had a bad dream yesterday on the show that I talked about that everyone laughed at. But I made the analogy of, like, you know, when you go to a restaurant and it's pretty busy and you know, someone complains or writes a bad review about it, and then people start to think, oh, that's a bad restaurant. But what they haven't taken into account, in over the course of that month, there was 1,000 people who went to that restaurant and maybe they had 2 bad reviews. But does that mean the other people who didn't write a bad review enjoyed it? Probably, because people who are content don't usually voice, hey, that pull the chef out of the back, say, you know what, that was the best meal I ever had. We just don't do that. We pay our bill, right? We move out, we give a good tip, and that's it. So you're right. The Canucks need to mine that information from the entire fan base, not just the pitchforks and fire and you know, the Lord of the Flies group that wants everyone's head on a stake here when it comes to Twitter.
And it goes beyond that. I do think, you know, not everybody has been tired of what's going on with this team, but I do think there is a growing sense of that with a lot of people that were patient at one point as well. We'll continue that conversation as the show goes on, bringing the latest on the Canucks Edmonton Oilers puck drop coming up just after 12:30. The Green Report, that's up next as the Land Rover pregame show continues. Sat and C-Mac on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Time now for the Green Report. Here's Brendan Batchelor.
It's the Vancouver Canucks and the Edmonton Oilers this afternoon from Rogers Place in Edmonton, as I'm joined now by Canucks head coach Travis Green. And Travis, you lose against the Flames the other night, but I know you thought it was an improved effort from the previous game in Winnipeg.
I did. I thought the first period was a period we probably could have came out of the game 1-0. I thought if you looked at both goals, I would have liked to have seen us get the puck out on the first goal, and we make a mistake on the second goal, but you know, other than that, we probably could have came out of that lead with a tie or better. I liked our second period and thought we deserved a better fate. We just couldn't put the puck in the back of the net. But overall, I thought our energy was much better. Our compete level was much better that game, as we weren't very happy with how we played that second game in Winnipeg.
You've only got 12 forwards on your roster right now, but you do have 8 defensemen, and you're rotating Rathbone and Chatfield back into the lineup today. How do you look at particularly the way you want to approach the blue line over these final handful of games and getting some young guys in and giving them opportunity?
Well, it's no secret that we've been playing a lot of hockey in a short amount of days. We're finishing with 5-7 and 4-5 here, so we're going to try to use all our D-men, everyone probably will get a night off, playing 4-5 or 5-7. If we've got extra bodies, we're going to try to use it, especially if we've got guys that have played in the league and have shown that they're capable of it. So we'll probably give everyone or most of the guys a night off over the stretch here. And tonight Schmidt will come out and the two young guys will go in.
And the other night on the power play, you gave a little bit of a different look with both of your units. How much do you look at these final few games as an opportunity to play around with things and try out different combinations, both on the special teams and at 5-on-5 as well?
Yeah, we're not really toying with our systems 5-on-5. We're trying to play them as well as we can and be sharp in our details. I think as far as the power play goes, we haven't been scoring a lot on our power play. We've had the one group loaded up. We wanted to try 2 different groups the other night. I thought the second group went out and gave us some good looks. Again, we've got to work to get more power plays, though, for me. A lot of times a power play isn't effective because they're only getting 1 or 2 a game. They don't get into a rhythm, but hopefully we can draw some penalties and work to get some penalties.
Travis, thanks for this. Good luck today.
All right. Thanks, Batch.
That is Travis Green with Brendan Batchelor for the Green Report, and this is the Land Rover pregame show on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network. Satyar Shah with Craig McEwen. And C-Mac, Travis is in this position now where he's got to coach out the final 4 games of the season. And earlier today, during his media availability, he was asked about his contract situation and said, hey, I'm not getting into that. It is what it is. I'm focused on doing these games. But just from a human element, it can't be an easy situation to be in for a head coach, too, when you kind of know you don't have, a contract for next year signed. You hear all the rumblings and you're still trying to coach out the stretch and do your best and try to get the best out of these guys.
Yeah, when we talk, Sat, about how the ice is an escape for players when they get to play the game, it takes them away from their day-to-day. In Travis Green's case, there is no escape. You step behind that bench and you're like, hey, am I going to do this after the next 4 games? You're with a group of guys. You're looking out at over the ice and trying to coach and how to do it. Listen, he's professional. He's going to do his best. But make no mistake about it, the Canucks could win all 4 of these games and Green could do the most masterful coaching job. It would appear that that's not going to be the end determination of where he sits or where he lands or what happens. I'm still of the mindset, Sat, and just call me maybe an eternal optimist, that once the season's over and they do their deep dive or whatever, that Travis and company can come to an agreement, because I do think he's done a good job here. Can they all improve? Yes, do a better job. But you're right. It must be so difficult for him just to wonder and to sit there, and you get caught up in the moment and you're trying to do the X's and O's, I guess, on some levels. But when you know that, the teams that you're facing, one's going in the playoffs here and doesn't really, care too much about today outside of getting some rust off, the next 3 after that are against a team that is like you out. I can only imagine how challenging and difficult that is for Travis as a human being, not as an NHL coach, because he does what he does, but as a human being, yeah, that's so tough on him.
It's going to be interesting, right? Because one thing I will say about Travis, and because I know a lot of, there are fans that want change and want a different coach too, and all this sort of stuff. And talking to people around the league, Travis Green has a good reputation. So if he doesn't come back to Vancouver, and I know people kind of wonder if that's true or, you know, because Travis has a lot of people in the media that do defend him, right? And talk about, okay, well, you know, he's probably better than he gets credit for. He's in a tough situation. But I do think he's the type of guy, or he is a coach that is well respected around the league. And if he does hit free agency, it'll be interesting to see kind of where he ranks, because there's so many head coaches available this year. And as much as we're talking about Travis Green's money, I don't think any of those even veteran head coaches are going to be getting that Babcock contract, right? That $5 million, $6 million per year deal. I just don't know if that's going to exist. So I kind of wonder how Travis Green fits in with all those other head coaches that are available in free agency this offseason, because there's going to be a lot to pick from and not that many positions available.
Yeah, and that's, you know, outside of Travis really enjoying being in Vancouver and working with this group and wants to finish what he started, he also realizes that, hey, these jobs don't grow on trees. There's not a lot of them. So even when you have one, you don't want to let one go, because it could be a while before you get back into the club or get an opportunity or a chance to do it. So, yeah, that's really going to be interesting, Sat, in the sense of the dollars and cents and that point of view, plus the opportunity for other teams to select from a good group of coaches who are sitting there on the sidelines right at the moment, that fit, that swaying an organization, that's tough. So Travis knows that his best bet or one of his better options is to stay here, and that's probably what he hopes to do. And I would suspect, yeah, ownership is looking at it from a money point of view and going, hey, you know, the good old days of paying coaches whatever might not be here because of the pandemic. So yeah, a challenging situation for him, and one that, until I guess they start making proposals, hopefully they do, they can find out where each side sits.
Yeah, and I think that's going to be, you know, one of the things we see here over the next little while. Satyar Shah with Craig McEwen, and this is the Land Rover pregame show on Sportsnet 650. The Canucks, well, they are taking on the Edmonton Oilers, and one of the things we haven't really talked about is the power play. And when the Canucks play, you score at McDonald's. For every Canucks game day, you can get a $2 Big Mac exclusively at restaurants through the McDonald's app. Plus, every time the Canucks score on the power play, you can win a $50 gift card. Conditions apply. Visit sportsnet.ca/650 to sign up and check it out. Now, when it comes to that power play, Jack Rathbone draws back in, and we didn't really see the power play get a ton of opportunities the last little while here. But from the moment we kind of saw Rathbone with Quinn Hughes on that first unit a little bit, there was some intrigue. So when it comes to special teams here, again, this isn't determining anything for the rest of this season, but if they do kind of put Rathbone on that first unit again, I am intrigued to see how two defensemen can run that unit and kind of see if that adds another wrinkle here, and what we saw in that one game that Rathbone got on the power play, if that is something they can build on.
I think it is, Sat, in the sense that of how well both those guys skate and how dynamic they are. Listen, we've seen this evolution. I mean, back in the day, I remember power plays where you only had two defensemen back there, and then they started toying it by putting some forwards and all this sort of stuff. But if you have two dynamic guys who I believe will push each other, there was a moment when Rathbone scored, I felt in that game, where you saw Hughes almost step it up a bit, like, okay, you got this, I'm going to get this. That could be exciting as well, in the sense of, if one of them does something special on the power play, the next time it goes out, well, the other guy's like, well, I'm gonna do you one better and do that. So I like the idea of having, especially young, mobile, quick, dynamic players who can move it around a little bit. At times, I've just felt that the power play is a little bit too static, too predictable. By having both a dynamic defenseman on both sides, maybe that brings some variety, spices it up a bit, and some unpredictability to it.
And that's the thing that's been kind of weird about that power play. It is too predictable. And it is strange when it comes to power play, C-Mac, that even guys that are super talented sometimes just simply don't click. The Toronto Maple Leafs, for instance, one of the big issues they have, and they're worried about their fans and their team, is that power play, which has that much talent, has been sputtering heading into the postseason. So even good power plays have times where they just can't get things going.
Yeah, and you know, we've seen that over time. Canucks 2011, the great power play, yeah, until the end. And it just, they still had the same great players for the most part. But yeah, it just is one of those things where, again, confidence and getting on a bit of a roll and getting clicking. But I would be afraid of that Leafs group, even if they're a bit sputtering coming in with the talent that they have.
Well, and that's the thing. Talent usually does overcome for the Canucks. Well, that's the hope is going to be for next season, if that power play can help them make the postseason. Canucks, Edmonton Oilers. This has been the Land Rover pregame show. Puck drop coming up. Brendan Bachelor and Corey Hirsch, the call on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.